Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Each week, I invite a different guest from a different walk of life to talk to me about books that they've read, which have influenced them, and books they suggest we take to the beach this summer. You've no excuse not to be well read. Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Alex Borge from Meta.
That's right, yeah.
So you work a lot with startups and IT and that kind of thing?
That's correct, yes.
Do you spend lots of time like reading business books and...
Absolutely, yes. A lot of articles, yeah. Papers, books, you know, technical books.
Do you find them a bit repetitive, or do you really think, oh, that is the new thing? Or are they normally stuff that's repackaged and, you know, ideas that we used to have in the days when a new business wasn't called a startup?
Not really, because technology is very dynamic. So, you know, what rules and what principles we applied maybe 3-4 years ago, even in, you know, in managing and how to manage projects, those rules have changed completely, and they keep changing. So you really have to keep abreast of what's happening, especially on the technology front.
So you keep, there's a lot of reading to be done for your work, let alone for your own interest. And what about, do you get time to sort of read for your own interest?
No, absolutely. I mean, in fact, I would make a distinction. I mean, when you read for work, it's mostly it's informative type of reading. Mm-hmm. So you would learn just to keep abreast and, you know, and be informed about what's happening. But then the reading I do for my pleasure, that is more formative, I would consider, you know, so, and I do quite a lot of that. I mean,
you don't read like business books before you sleep, or do you actually read at work? Is that something you can actually...
No, I usually do my reading about work. I tend to do it at home as well, like in the evening. But reading for pleasure is something I've always engaged in since I was a child.
Okay.
In fact, it's a habit. Before going to bed, I have to read. The difference is that I just probably fall asleep after a few minutes now. But then I do cut out time and sit down on the sofa and read. But because of work, I don't do as much as I'd like to.
You said something interesting there that I forgot, because when we were kids, you used to have your torch and you'd read and read and read. It felt like for hours you'd be staying up. It felt like the whole night to read. And like you said, now, a couple of paragraphs and you wake up with the book on your nose. I wonder what happens.
Yes.
So, less fresh air. Maybe we should run around more. So you still read business books at home. Because do you find time to read at the office? Because I always find it...
Very hard.
Yeah, because it's just too many
distractions. You don't find Well, we do have, at the co-working space in Smart City, we actually have a chill-out area, so there's a sofa.
Mm-hmm.
But I must have tried it once, and really not to read books, just to read stuff related to work. And it's hard, because, you know, you're distracted, you're not relaxed.
No, because I always find it strange, you know, through work you have to read, but you can't read at work, so you're always working at home, essentially. Another thing, because you're in technology and all of that stuff, proper book person, or are you an electronic book person? Do you Kindle and iPad and all of that stuff?
The paradox is that I work in a technical environment, but I consider myself more of a humanities person. I mean, I love, you know, history, you know, sociology and philosophy. You know, I'm very drawn to psychology as well. So,
okay.
And I always enjoyed reading, so it's been a very, very important aspect of my life, you know. It has really helped me grow, I find, you know.
So what types of books do you read then to grow?
Well, as such, I don't think I have a particular, or I never really thought I would sort of categorize the books I like, but I think I tend to be drawn towards books that sort of make me reflect a lot, and, you know, I like to dig deep in the meaning of the book, the characters, the author, and I can't say I like thrillers but I tend to like mostly, I think, European authors, and I have my top 10 books, for example, which really were very important, really formed me, I think. I don't know, for example, Moby Dick is one of my favorites.
Mm. You actually got through it, though?
Yes, absolutely.
As a grown-up?
As a grown-up. But that was quite a while ago. But I, you know, sometimes I go back to it and I read a few excerpts, you know, and...
Okay.
And then I go through a bit of through phases. Like recently, I've been reading a lot of books by José Saramago. He's a Portuguese Nobel Prize winner.
Is that because you recently came back from Portugal and you discovered him there? Or?
No, it's the other way around, actually. I became curious and I wanted to go I wanted to travel to Lisbon, especially.
Okay.
In fact, I went to a couple of places which were, you know, where one of the scenes in one of the books I read by Saramago is set there, and. So I got really drawn by José Saramago, and a book which particularly impressed me, and I would consider that among my top 10 reads, is The Gospel According to Jesus Christ.
Right.
And it's a fantastic book, an amazing book.
What did it do to you?
I don't know, because it's a book that can... well, José Saramago is well known for, or was well known because he died a few years ago, but he was an atheist.
Okay.
So so it tends to challenge you know, the traditional view of religion, and especially the characters such as the devil and Jesus Christ.
Mm.
And but it's a book that can be read by someone who is a Catholic as well,
and not be offended,
not be profoundly offended.
Okay, because that sort of, you know, when you start to talk about it, you think, would that go down well in a place like Malta?
Not very much.
Okay.
But
if you're enlightened.
José Saramago, I mean, as I said, he's a Nobel Prize winner.
Ah.
And he's I mean, in Portugal, he's really revered as an author. And it's a book which struck me very much. The way he kind of interprets the character as Jesus Christ as more human.
Okay.
And the devil as not such a nasty character at all. If anything, you know, a rather seasoned person who looks at life realistically, you know, with its real problems. Mm. And I loved it. I must say, it's a book which really, really impressed me.
And from there, what when you read a book after something like that, do you go for something light and fun to kind of cleanse the palate almost, or to not interfere with the memory, or do you go on to just the next thing that he wrote, or...?
I did. I read another two or three books by José Saramago, but I consider this one absolutely the best. I read another one by Saramago, and that's called The Year of the Death of Ricardo Reis.
Okay.
And that basically dwells about one of Pessoa's characters. Pessoa is very famous, a father of modern Portuguese literature, I guess, Fernando Pessoa. He's another revered author. And I would say I tend to be drawn a lot by existentialist authors. You know, Jean-Paul Sartre as well, and Albert Camus, that kind of reading. For me, a book is a companion.
If they're not just...
In fact, I am a slow reader.
Mm.
Also because of the time, you know, lack of time I have.
Uh-huh.
So I tend to be drawn a lot by... I consider myself a bit of an existentialist. I mean, so it's a little bit of a contrast because on the facade, I have to be very practical at work, you know, deal with, you know, very, very solid and realistic problems, you know, helping the startups and creating an environment which is conducive to, you know, executing their business. But inside me, you know, deep inside, I am... probably a complete opposite. I love to analyze deeply and look at things from different angles and perhaps, you know, wondering what if or what also wondering, asking myself what the purpose of everything is.
Probably actually helps you in your work, because once you've sort of processed and deliberated on things, then you can make quick decisions in other scenarios because you have a memory bank to refer to.
Perhaps. Possibly, yes.
You know, not all work related, but like I said, the psychology, when you're dealing with people, all of these things come out and other characters might come to mind.
Yeah, it does. In fact, I think reading helps your imagination.
Absolutely.
So, in fact, it's something which I try to tell my kids about, you know, reading really helps you empathize, you know, because you're reading the thoughts of someone, you know, who wrote the book and did his own research, and so you're really immersing yourself in the mindset of the author and the characters.
Yeah.
So yes, it does help. I am a very keen observer. I am very drawn by psychology. I try to understand, you know, I try to analyze people, you know, from looking at different angles. So I am a very, very deep thinker.
Making me a little uncomfortable here. Don't look, close.
I am very, 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 a very keen observer. Mm. So reading is definitely, has helped me a lot.
Yeah. And do you have any books that are in your lists that are light and fun and make you just laugh out loud? Or is it more the deep, like I said, the ones?
They tend to be a bit more on the deeper side, I think. There are a few lighter ones. For example, funnily enough, the book I'm reading now, it might surprise you, but it's Odysseus.
Okay.
By a man called Homer.
Oh. These are quite intense. Yeah.
I always liked the character of Odysseus. I think he's an amazing character, and I love the Greeks because the Greeks have said everything that needs to be said about mankind, you know, humankind. Oh. So all the vices, all the, you know, just everything.
They
just said it, you know.
They did it, and they said it.
2,500 years ago, Odysseus I like the character of Odysseus, and probably I might possibly identify myself with him in some way, you know, with the travels, maybe even if they're just mental travels, mental meanderings. So, you know, the adventures, the way he copes with situations, you know, and he's a survivor. Mm. He's really a survivor. So, and I think the story of the Odyssey is a little bit the story of every one of us, I think.
Because I have a recollection of you going on an interesting trip. Was that whale watching or something?
Oh, yes. That
along
was
those lines? One of these Facebook memories I have that...
That was... I call that my whaling trip. And there are some parallels which I drew with Moby Dick, because the situation, although different, is somewhat similar. For example, when we went for this 1 week sailing trip between Corsica and Liguria.
So that close with whales?
And yes.
Okay.
And you actually get to see the whales maybe, 15, 20 meters away. And the frenzy that happens when you sight a whale and you sight a little spout is like everybody on deck, you know, and they have to head straight for the whale to follow it. And so there is this, that flurry of excitement on board, which is possibly similar to what Melville experienced when he was a whaler. I don't know, but in a good way, you know, because
you're still seeing the whale.
Snapping pictures and recording. And because it was actually a research motor sailor. So there are some researchers on board. And in fact, it's a trip, it's a journey I would recommend anyone to.
But we don't have to read the book first, do we?
No, of course not. But some research does help. And they actually teach you. They tell you a few things about whales.
Uh-huh.
And they're amazing creatures.
No, I mean, so. I when you see them on the TV, I'm quite comfortable with them there, because I don't know if in real life it must be magnificent, but also a little bit of adrenaline going around there.
Yeah. In fact, the best moment was when we had been following this sperm whale for a few dives, and each time the whale would surface and then we'd follow it. Then after about four of these dives, the skipper said, "Okay, guys, you know, let's jump in now." And so basically, you're swimming there, you know,
waiting for him to come.
A minute earlier, there was an 18, 19 meter Goliath, you know.
Yeah. No, just phenomenal. Can't even imagine.
Yeah, that was an amazing. I really enjoyed it.
I think it was dolphin watching in San Francisco, but actually I was sick as a dog, and thankfully, you know, sort of got in quite quickly. It wasn't a pleasant day at all. So the idea of doing that kind of thing again, no. But anyway, what other books have led you to do something different with your life? So you said about the Porch Girl, the Moby Dick. So is there other links between how you live and how you love, you know, how you...
I don't know. I mean, I think a book which really formed me was a book which I read when I was very, very young.
Okay.
I was 13 years old, maybe 12, 13 years old. And it was a book which was banned in Malta at the time.
Okay.
And it wasn't even a fiction book. It was a book by Desmond Morris called The Naked Ape.
Okay, don't know that.
And it was a book about anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I mean, I was quite good at sciences in school, and the fact that humans were being looked at as an animal, you know, observing all the different behavior in various situations, where it was flight, whether it was fear mm-hmm. or hunger or. It kind of changed my perspective, especially because I had gone to a Catholic school, and the teachings I received were very, very traditional. Mm-hmm. It's a book which I think was a kind of epiphany for me.
Okay.
And I started to analyze and look at life from a more sort of scientific perspective.
And how did your parents feel about that at the time? Were they pretty liberal?
No, they probably weren't very aware, but that's when I began to question religion, mm-hmm. and which led me eventually to just, I am not religious at all,
mm-hmm.
and that was a decision I took quite early in life. So
it's something probably most kids didn't speak about. In fact, people still really don't talk about it. But yes.
Doesn't
make you a bad person. If you live by a good moral code, frankly.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, now the situation is possibly changing in Malta. But at the time, if you say that you don't believe in God or you're an atheist, you know, people would say you're an animal. You don't have values. That's absolutely not true. Mm. Because you still have values. I mean, and I always tell people, listen, I mean, I love my family. I pay my taxes. You know,
if you're a good guy, there are plenty of awful people who go to church every day. Just because they go to church doesn't mean they turn out to be
exactly.
nice. You know.
So that's what led me to looking at things in a different way. You know, from a different perspective, looking at life from a more scientific. Being a bit more objective and looking at life from a human point of view, humanism actually. So being more critical mm-hmm. and questioning. So that's
what led you to the book though. That book originally, was it because it was banned? You thought, oh, let me have a look, or was
my
it
my brother had bought it? He was working in London, and something which really struck me was that when he brought it to Malta, the cover page had a naked man and woman and an ape,
mm-hmm.
and the customs officer had ripped the cover. So you know, we just. Made me curious, and yeah. I read the blurb, and then I said, interesting. And obviously, that was an age. So the first chapter I read was the one about sex.
Okay.
Obviously, I was 13. So, and then it was an amazing book. I mean, it for me at the time, it poured cold water over all the magic and all the intangibles.
Uh-huh.
You know the. In fact, that's when I began to question, you know, going to Mars had no meaning anymore for me, you know, and things like that. I really began to question things.
So after that, as a 13-year-old boy, what sort of other books did you read? Was there anything came close, or was it?
Well,
just like...
then of course. I mean, when I was a kid, I read all the usual, you know, those.
Please say famous.
You know, family. Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn and Ivanhoe. I read all that. Yes. Really, really nice books. And then another great book which I read was 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Yeah.
That was an amazing book, and I reread it a few years ago. It's a fantastic book.
I really
can't explain, but I think it is somehow the fact that it tells the story of a family over about three, four generations. And it reminded me a little bit about all the stories from the family, because I come from a family which is mixed. So I am the youngest of the family, and my dad was nearly the youngest. He was the one before the last. So the memory goes back, you know, when he used to tell me stories, you know, memory would go back to like, you know, early 20th century or even earlier.
Wow.
So I kind of related with that, you know, and all the convolutions and all the different stories, different characters in the family.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that, I think.
Values and the times and everything.
Yeah, values, contradictions. Kind of, so
And the, you know, the parameters of Malta itself through those times.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
though again, the book is set in South America, of course. But I could relate. It's a book I really loved, and I would really recommend.
Did you read any more of his, or?
There's another book I started reading recently, because I tend to read in two languages. I read in Italian and in English.
Okay.
And sometimes I read a few books in Maltese as well. There's not much of a choice, though, admittedly. And a couple of books in French as well.
And now you're just showing off.
But I grew up at home. Even our pet dog understood three languages.
Okay.
So, I mean, I was brought up to speak three languages. Because that's, you know, my mom was Italian. I went to English-speaking school. Mm-hmm. I spoke Maltese to my dad. So the book I read, I tend to read Spanish books in Italian because it's kind of closer. So another book I tried reading by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, what was it? It was about a dictator. I couldn't finish it. So maybe I'll have another go at it later.
Yeah, I find it really hard to go back to a book because you think, no, there was something that stopped me. I didn't like somebody or something that stopped you reading. Yeah. And then to go back to them, you've really got to be, there's nothing else in the pile that's enticing you to read it. So
sometimes it's a challenge. Yeah? Sometimes you have to put yourself in a situation where you say, okay, you have to make an effort to read.
Absolutely.
Some of these books I read, you have to make an effort.
Now I find that, you know, you get home and automatically you start cooking or whatever, or you're rushing to go out, or you automatically just stick the telly on, and it's like, no, don't turn the telly on, read, and then you know, if you need to do something else, because once the TV's on, you fall asleep on the sofa.
No, TV is, I mean, I don't watch
hardly
TV.
There.
I hardly ever. I mean, the only thing I watch maybe sometimes some news or football.
Boys. All the same. what other books? Are there any books that you'd recommend to people as like, yeah, this is something you get your teeth into, this is something you should have a read of?
I think it's really very, very personal and very subjective. I mean, I tend to read these kinds of books I've just mentioned. So if people are more into, you know, detective stories and thrillers,
it's not going to be their thing.
Then the books I read would not be their cup of tea.
If someone was going on a world cruise of all the books that you've read, which is the one you just say, you've got X time and not much else to do, read this. Or if they were going to prison, maybe.
I think my favourite two would be Moby Dick and The Gospel According to Jesus Christ.
Okay.
That is... I think I'd go for the latter one.
Yeah.
It's not a book for everyone's teeth.
Mm.
It's, but it's definitely a book I would recommend.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
It helps you. It you know, if you have faith, it makes it stronger. If you don't have faith, you know, it makes you more convinced about your beliefs.
Yeah. So. No, and when somebody's done the research for you, sort of thing, and it just backs up your gut feel, then that's fine either way.
So, I mean, there are other books, of course, so lighter books. I mean, I for example, an author I really enjoyed was Graham Greene. That was the lighter books.
Yeah.
You know, The Power and the Glory, that's an amazing book. I love that, Power and the Glory. The priest in the revolution in Mexico. The sinner, you know, he's not sure, he's a sinner, but he's helping people, you know, and a desperate priest. Have you read that?
No, I haven't, but it identifies with so many sort of cheeky, chappy characters.
Was it the Heart of the Matter? It was amazing. Oh, Heart of the Matter. It's a story about a suicide, really.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. A really good book. Graham Greene is great.
So we should add him to our summer reading list.
Yeah, I mean, he has some lighter books as well. What was the one? The one in Brighton Rock. I read a few by Graham Greene. Graham Greene is really good.
Yeah.
But again, even he is a bit... he's got a complex character as well. So, you know, possibly like me, you know.
No, but they make the most interesting people when you end up with somebody... You know, you read some books that are so fluffy that you can't even remember... what happened. So I think it's fantastic when a book leaves a mark on you. And
in fact, you're making me reflect. I never really thought about it, but there possibly aren't that many Well, another author I like, who's as lighter, but again, pretty good, is an Italian author, Andrea Camilleri.
Of course, yes.
Andrea Camilleri. I mean, they're thrillers, but really good. Really insightful. I love
so many. And you just wonder how one man can churn. Individual pieces of work.
In fact, I've been to the Commissario Montalbano tour, when you go to Ragusa, go to the places, because the TV series is really, has really good photography.
And it makes you want to go. And apparently it's done amazing things for the tourism. Yeah. We were there last week,
absolutely,
fact,
yes.
And they were saying how many people come to stay in, the area.
Andrea Camilleri is a really good author.
Phenomenal.
Obviously, I don't know how it renders in English, because Andrea Camilleri writes in a Sicilian kind. He writes Italian with a Sicilian twist. He includes Sicilian words.
Okay, which are a bit like Malteser. They have that sort of depth about them, and there's a... I actually don't know the word in English, but it's so descriptive that it's...
It's true.
You have a sentence, and in Maltese or dialect
He intercalates in Sicilian, Sicilian dialect. That's exactly what he does. He's a really good author, I would recommend. I mean, if you want lighter reading, go for Andrea Camilleri.
But it's just that kind of, you can be on the beach with that, or be on a plane and not be too worried about anything else that's distracting you.
But he also writes good non-fiction books, huh?
Very good
non-fiction, very well researched.
Okay.
Very well researched. I read a couple. Wow, really good.
No, I've seen interviews with him. I'm learning Italian slowly and sort of try and watching Montalbano. It's the part of my lessons. But I've seen interviews with him, and he just seems amazing. Absolutely amazing.
He's heavy. He has a chain smoker.
Big beard. But he just seems like someone you'd want to sit on the floor like a little girl and listen to him just talking forever.
And he's great fun, actually, I'm sure you'd enjoy interviewing him.
I'd love to. Oh, God, that would, anyone listening that knows him. Our time's come to an end. It's been really interesting talking to you. I just didn't know that about you. So there you go. So that's Alec Borge talking to me, Monique Chambers, on Beach Books and Beyond.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for joining me, Monique Chambers, on this week's Beach Books and Beyond. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Brecht for helping me to produce this programme. Join us again next week for Beach Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM.